Hello everyone, Χαίρετε, merhaba to all of Cyprus. My name is Yoli Orfanidi. I am a volunteer for Birth Forward, the first organization in Cyprus which bridges the whole spectrum of parenting from preconception to pregnancy to birth and early years of parenthood. Today, for our series of interviews with experts in their fields, I am very honored to be interviewing Deborah Carla Solomon, who is a leading expert in baby and child development and is based in Los Angeles, California. Deborah is the author of the book, Baby Knows Best, Raising a Confident and Resourceful Child, The Rye Way. Now, I did not say the right way, I said the Rye Way, and Deborah will very shortly explain what that means. Deborah, welcome to this interview, and thank you for finding time for us in your busy schedule.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm glad to talk to you.
So Deborah, to the title of your book, what is the Rye Way? What does Rye stand for?
Rye stands for Resources for Infant Educarers, which is a very, very long name. So we always refer to it by the acronym, which is RIE, but it includes the word educarers, which is a word that Magda Gerber, who was the founder or co-founder of RIE, she coined the word educaring to combine the idea of education and caring, that those two things are interlinked, that the baby learns so much during the caregiving routines. So when we change a nappy, when we feed a baby, it's not just about a task to hurry through. Oh, the baby's hungry or the baby needs a new nappy, so let's get this done. But those times are really important times for, number one, for building our relationship, because by their nature, they're very intimate. We're holding the baby close while we're feeding her. The baby is naked while we're changing the nappy or bathing her, etc. So there are opportunities for relationship building and also for the baby to learn, about herself and her relationship with the adult, and also just in a practical way to learn how these tasks are accomplished.
Mm-hmm. So your story, what is it? What inspired you to become a RIE practitioner and an international speaker, as a matter of fact, on the matter?
Well, good fortune. I gave a baby shower for a friend of mine, and a friend of hers gave her a book called Your Self-Confident Baby by Magda Gerber. And I thought, that's really strange. I never would have thought of a baby being self-confident. So I went to the bookstore, and actually I went to the bookstore and I couldn't find the book. I thought, oh, they don't have it. I'm not going to read it. And as I was walking out of the bookstore, the woman who gave my friend the book was walking in. I haven't seen her since in all these years. And she said, oh, Deborah, of course they have that book. And she turned me around, took me back to the bookshelf, and it had just been misshelved. So I feel as though it was fate, because I just said, oh, I'm going to give up. I'm the mother of a young baby. I can't find it. I'll find another book. But anyhow, I went home, I read the book. It made so much sense to me intuitively. And I was fortunate to live in Los Angeles, where Magda Gerber began the organization and where classes are accessible. So my husband and I found our way to classes, and it transformed how we saw our son. We realized that he was not helpless. He actually was quite competent in certain ways. So it helped us to understand him developmentally, and it gave us some tools, sort of how to respond when he cries, when he seems to be inconsolable, how to respond if he was having a conflict over a toy when he, you know, when he was a toddler with another child, etc. And also what it helped us learn, really, what it means to be respectful of him at a very young age, which was something it had never quite occurred to us that way. We thought, well, we love him. We were probably overwhelming him with our love, you know? So it really transformed how we saw him and made our life as parents so much easier. And it was so profound for me that I thought, oh, this is really what I want to do. So I completed the RIE professional development course, and I went to Budapest and studied at the Pickler Institute. I was a teacher And then I was executive director of Rye for 8 years. And then 2 years ago, I decided I really wanted to get back to teaching and speaking to people about Rye because that's my first love. So that's why I'm here.
With a grown-up Rye baby now.
With a grown-up Rye baby, yes.
Now, you mentioned earlier that babies learn through caregiving. Mm-hmm. It's a common notion in Western society that we teach babies when we play with them. Babies learn through play. So we play with them in order for them to learn even more. Where does Rye stand with this notion?
That's a really good question. There are several Rye principles, if you will, sort of guiding principles. And one of them is for the baby to have time each day for uninterrupted play. It doesn't mean that we never interact with a baby or a toddler. If a toddler invites us to play, that we say, oh, no, you're supposed to have uninterrupted play now. But the importance for some time during the day that is uninterrupted, that we may sit on the floor quietly and observe them and see what they do and what they're interested in, but we allow them to be self-initiating. So the idea of allowing the child some time during the day to play without interruption, that they can follow their curiosities, what they want to play with. First of all, if they want to play, a young baby might want to lay on his back and look out the window at the light streaming in the window. But if they want to play, which object they want to play with and what they want to do with it. And there's certainly research that supports the importance of this to support a child to be self-initiating. So the child can learn to be self-reliant and ultimately become self-confident, you know, rather than relying on the adult to show the baby what the adult thinks is important or interesting, to give the baby opportunity to discover what the baby finds interesting. And then through the manipulation of objects for a young baby, develop their fine motor skills, learn to be tenacious, to sort of try something and try something again and to not give up. Sometimes they might give up because they're tired or they have a basic need that must be met by the adult. But it's a very different point of view than thinking, it's playtime, now I need to entertain my baby.
Yeah, it's right. A very strange notion for Western culture to just leave babies to do what they know best, as mm-hmm. as your title mm-hmm. says. Now, how does one go about to make the actual shift and maybe start practicing some of the Rye principles? I mean, what would you say is the first and most important thing that parents can do in order to start exploring Rye and implementing it in their lives?
Yeah, it's very comprehensive. So you've asked a good question. It's too mm-hmm. much to take it all on at once. So mm-hmm. I always recommend that people start with slowing down, mm-hmm. moving slowly. So mm-hmm. when they're carrying their young baby to change the nappy, to move slowly. Magda said, how slowly? As slowly as you can, and then a little bit more slowly. Just by moving slowly creates a sense of peacefulness, mm-hmm. right? Dr. Pickler, who was Magda Gerber's mentor and friend, referred to it as ceremonious slowness. If you think of the great religions of the world, their leaders during their rituals, during their ceremonies, they always move and gesture slowly. And that elicits a sense of calm and peacefulness. Right? So just by moving slowly helps the baby to feel calmer. And if the baby feels calmer and more secure, then they're more peaceful. Therefore, they're easier to care for. So it doesn't take an advanced degree to practice moving slowly. It takes conscious practice until right. the adult has internalized it and it comes naturally. And even mm-hmm. with a toddler, sometimes once the children are upright, they're walking, then the adult picks up the pace. You know, and then we find that the toddler becomes irritable. And sometimes they're irritable because they just can't keep up. We're moving too quickly for them. So I recommend that people start with practicing moving slowly. And then the other two things are to practice always telling the baby or the toddler what you're going to do before you do it. So I'm going to pick you up now. I'm going in the other room and I'll be back in a minute. And also if something happens in the environment that the child hears or sees, that we make note of it. Oh, the dog barked. That surprised you. He just came in the room. Your brother just jumped over you, whatever it might be. But to forecast for the baby, for the toddler, what's coming up next, that too helps them to feel secure. And it's also respectful. And respect is something that that's one of the sort of foundational pieces of Rye. You know, what does it mean to be respectful to a young baby, for instance, who can't say, well, I don't really like how you're holding me. This doesn't feel very good. So getting back to the things to begin practicing, slowing down, telling the child what you're going to do before you do it, and then what we refer to as tarry time, T-A-R-R-Y, to tarry or wait or pause for a moment after you've told the baby that you're going to pick him up. Pause for him to process what you've said. Because it's wonderful to remember to say to the baby, I'm going to pick you up now. But then if we immediately go about it and do that, the baby is still going to be surprised because it takes longer for them, especially a young baby, to process verbal communication than it does for an adult. For us, it's immediate if we're speaking the same language, right?
Right. That is very interesting. Deborah, I'm also going to welcome our president, Aline Pedersen, in our conversation.
Hi, Aline.
I just wanted to ask you, because we're also all about evidence-based here in Birth Forward. What you're saying is extremely interesting and very new notion for parents in Western civilized society. I just wanted to ask, what is the scientific evidence to support Rye and its principles?
There's certainly a lot of independent research that supports the importance of attentive caregiving and really what that means, so that the adult is not rushing through the caregiving as if it's only a custodial task, meaning, you know, we need to bathe you, diaper you, etc. There's research that supports the importance of, they may describe it differently, but the eye contact, the gesture, the human connection that happens during caregiving. A lot of research about that. There's certainly research that supports the idea of a child becoming autonomous and self-confident through the adult allowing them opportunities to practice self-reliance. In other words, not hovering, not doing so much for them that they begin to have a self-image of themselves as less than capable and therefore become less confident.
You also mentioned before the Pickler Institute in Budapest. Is there some research going on there?
I don't know if there's research going on there currently. There was years ago in the 60s, the World Health Organization did a longitudinal study of a group of children there. And I'm not sure what current research is going on. Mm-hmm. One of the other Rye principles is having a 100% safe environment for play, because we can't let a child play independently without interruption. If there's something in the play space that's unsafe, at a certain point, the child's going to gravitate toward that. We are going to have to interrupt them. So if we want to support this idea of self-initiating play, then we have to provide a play space that is absolutely safe. And that's just common sense. That doesn't need to be supported by research. That's common sense. If there's some danger in the room, then we have to be vigilant and paying attention. And chances are good, at some point, we're going to have to interrupt the child. So this is something that sometimes parents are a little bit resistant to. But I've seen over and over again, when they decide to empty the room of some furniture for a short period of time so that their child can have a safe play space, how much freedom that provides for both the baby and for the adult to relax you know, and for the baby to know that they can play without interruption. Whatever they're curious about, they can continue sort of on that path.
Mm-hmm. Okay. From all the things you mentioned, there's one word that comes to mind, and that's mindfulness. So is Rai mindful parenting, basically? Is it just a way to help parents calm down? And so what are the benefits actually for the children when parents do that?
That's an interesting question. I think the benefits for the children of having a more relaxed parent is they can be more relaxed as well. Right. The message being sent to them is that the world is a safe, enjoyable place to be. It's not full of potential mishaps. So that's one key thing I think that's very important. I would go back to that play piece. The freedom to be able to play without any interruption for a period of time versus having somebody hovering over you or somehow sending you the message that, you know, what you're doing isn't appropriate. You know, to me, I just want to sort of shoo the person away, how annoying that would be. And then because they learn so much through play that the child's experience of play and investigation and inquiry and exploration and learning, I would want to support that to be a positive experience. So the more I'm able to sort of sit back and allow that to happen, and the child's attitude about play and learning, I think, is going to be a positive one. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of parents, they take a deep breath and they realize, you know, I can relax. My child is more competent than I thought. And I certainly have responsibilities for preparing the environment a certain way to look for cues that my child is hungry, tired, etc., and then providing whatever the need is for food, for rest, etc. But my task is not to fix everything and keep my baby happy all day long. I mean, that's an unrealistic expectation to put on ourselves. So over and over again, I see how parents, one, relax, and they start to enjoy being parents more. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have been working really harder than they need to work. And in that working so hard, it's almost as if they can't see their baby as clearly. They're on this mission to keep them happy all the time instead of sitting back and having a little bit of distance and noticing, oh, I thought she was going to get upset about that, but she didn't. You know, they begin to see that their babies are not so fragile and helpless. They have even a young baby has a level of competency. You know, yes. It happened just in class yesterday with a new family. Matter of fact, we had a climbing structure, a wooden structure. It's two steps up, a little platform, and two steps down. And somebody had crawled up onto the top, and he was sitting on the top platform. And somebody else came up beside him, and he didn't like it. He wanted the whole platform to himself. So he cried and he was to the other baby. And afterwards we talk about our observations during class. And I said, and I could sense that the parent was a little anxious. And I said, so what did you notice? How did he convey his unhappiness that this other baby was sharing the space with him? And his mom said, oh, he was very clear with that crying and that tone that he had. I said, yeah. I said, so that way he was quite competent and able to do that. He was speaking up for himself. A month ago, my guess is that she would have moved in to intervene. And he would have been robbed of that, what I think to be really valuable opportunity. So I think the more parents are able to see their babies as competent, not like 10-year-olds, but competent, the more they're able to relax and enjoy being parents.
Right. So mindfulness and all of what Riley supports is the key for parents to relax and just enjoy their children. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Aline wants to ask Deborah something, or
Yeah, first of all, just thank you so much for taking the time to speak
to us. My pleasure.
All the way across the continents.
Yeah.
And it's very, very interesting what you are talking about. I think it's some key elements there to understanding how to switch that doing, as you said, and always being in action and wanting to fix things and do things towards mm-hmm. being and more an observant and actually allowing and facilitating for the child to develop from within
mm-hmm.
and not being us putting things into the baby, but it's actually everything there and it's more facilitating basically for everything to come out
mm-hmm.
on its own
mm-hmm.
the way I hear you, and I think that's very, very good. But what about, so when the child, for example, one subject that obviously comes on is when the weaning comes up, and about the weaning, and how do you look at this in terms of the breastfeeding? When would it be natural for maybe a child to stop breastfeeding, or what would be the natural process in your opinion there to stop breastfeeding and go on to food, or maybe of course combining the two, how long and so forth? Could you have some thoughts about that?
Well, that's a good question. Magda Gerber talked a lot about readiness. So one baby might be ready to wean before another baby. One mother might want and be ready for her baby to wean perhaps before he is ready. So the concept of readiness and respect and self-respect, that the mother and child are in a relationship together. And so the breastfeeding has to continue to be meaningful and that both of them want to participate. I think sometimes mothers feel as though they must do everything for the benefit of the child, even if they're falling down exhausted and they're feeling resistant or resentful. And so Magda Gerber talked a lot about respect and for the parent to have self-respect. So we would look for cues that the child is ready. If the mother is fine continuing to breastfeed, we would look for cues that the child might be ready. And then perhaps start letting go of, instead of all of, you know, stopping at cold turkey, if you will, maybe saving that nursing right before bedtime, and maybe having that one be the last one to go, because that can sometimes be the most difficult to let go, because sleep in general in the evening, it can be hard to let go of the parent, the sort of existential awareness of I'm alone here in the world. But maybe the first one to let go might be the nursing in the morning. You know, the baby wakes up refreshed. Maybe the baby can do without being nursed then. But to help the parent look for cues, because sometimes the baby is ready and the mother may not be ready. Mm-hmm. And sort of to help both of them, I think, with that transition, because I think both have to be ready. And most often people talk about the readiness of the baby, and that sometimes they're not on the same timetable.
It really makes very so much sense what you're saying, Deborah. I just wanted to ask, because extended breastfeeding that you talked about now is part of also attachment parenting. How does Rai relate to attachment parenting? Are these two parenting approaches contradictory? Are they complementary? And in what way?
You know, I'm not an attachment parenting expert, but one way that I know, one place where I know we have a little bit of difference is in the baby wearing. Magda Gerber talked about, and Emmy Pickler talked about, the importance of the baby, even a very young baby, to have freedom of movement. And we see very young babies, newborn babies, enjoying that freedom of movement. Particularly in the first weeks, they have so little waking time. When they're awake, they're being nursed or perhaps a bath or having a nappy change. So the actual amount of waking time is very, very brief. The rest of the time that the baby should be laid on a flat surface to sleep, and that would be the most comfortable and would allow for freedom of movement and the best, deepest restorative sleep. I'm not going to ascribe this to Magda Gerber, but my observation of baby wearing is sometimes that, yes, the baby is close to the mother and can feel, hear the mother's heartbeat, for instance, but the mother is not necessarily paying any attention to the baby. The mother could be working on her laptop or doing something else. And Magda Gerber, I think, focused, drew people's attention to the importance of giving 100% attention part of the time versus fractured attention, perhaps all day long. And when it's predominantly fractured attention, the baby is always left wanting, mm-hmm. wanting more, until sometimes they give up. They learn they can never get full attention. So, but I think too that one of the basic RAI principles is trust in the infant's competence. So part of that is that even a young baby is competent enough to spend some time in a cozy area on their own and to be content. We see this over and over again. It's important, I think, for all human beings to have some time to themselves to turn the focus inward, for hopefully for the environment to be peaceful so that they can do that. And we see babies' attention going from alert and sort of more sustained attention to more diffuse attention, and the ability to lay on their backs and comfortably turn their focus wherever they want to is very different than, I think, being kind of uncomfortable in one of those contraptions or devices on a parent's body for the sake of being close to the mother physically. I don't think it's necessary.
An attachment parenting advocate would say that some of those baby carriers are very nice and soft and lovely for the baby. So if I might, let's say, paraphrase for a minute what you said, would you say yes to baby wearing, but mindfully, if it's done?
We would only say yes to baby wearing when it was necessary for safety reasons. Or, you know, for instance, if I was carrying a baby, but I was also holding the hand of a toddler, I might not feel that I could hold this baby securely without putting the baby in a carrier. So safety is paramount. Mm-hmm. But short of that, if I was at home, I would choose to have the baby have freedom of movement that a baby can't have, no matter how comfortable and soft the device is. The baby is still going to be in a static, contorted position, which is not beneficial for their gross motor development.
We have to wrap up. I'm guessing this is, we don't have a lot of time, Deborah. So I would just ask one last question and then Elink, if she wants to wrap up something. We are more or less isolated from mainland Europe Island here, but I'm sure people would love to learn more about RAI. So what would you say, what would you recommend that people can go and read, or even maybe attend courses of RAI? How can parents start exploring more of what RAI is?
Yeah, I would recommend reading one of Magda Gerber's books, if you're able to read in English, either Dear Parent or Your Self-Confident Baby, or my book, Baby Knows Best, which I wrote specifically for people who can't attend a class in person. So it's really a guidebook for implementing, practicing the approach. But to read a book, because as I travel around the world and I teach people, a lot of them are finding and studying RAI via social media. And I don't think that's the best way to go about it. I think to start with a book, something more complete. I also have a few audio workshops, very brief 30-minute audio workshops that are available on my website that can be useful to especially people who are just beginning to find out about the approach. And then start practicing one thing at a time. Maybe start practicing slowing down, moving slowly, and see how that feels to you and see how your baby responds.
Okay. Aline, would you like to say something now?
Well, I just want again to say thank you for your advice. I think it'll be very valuable for us to share this information with the population in Cyprus as well. There was one question about the soothing. So when a baby is asking at early stages or they need to be soothed at nighttime. Mm. You mentioned this with slow movement, and very often you see that there's a lot of this shaking movement used by many parents. I guess it is an instinctual thing, or it's something that we have seen other people do. What is your opinion just about that at the end?
You know, I think naturally some of us, I used to sway. So I don't think that we would ever want to say, well, don't do what comes naturally. But when we intervene in some way, either a lot of bouncing or whatever it might, or using a pacifier, a dummy, then the child learns to rely on these interventions. They learn to rely on our rocking them. Or they learn to rely on the pacifier. And eventually, they will need to learn how to soothe themselves. But in the beginning, they do rely on us. So rather than going to some big gesture, I had somebody in class who used to, you know, those big exercise balls, she used to bounce her daughter on that every night for an hour before her daughter went to sleep. Until finally her arms were so, she was in such pain, she said, I have to stop this. And she was surprised to discover that two nights later, her daughter had learned how to go to sleep on her own. So to not assume that a baby needs some kind of intervention. So if the baby was crying, for instance, I would pick up the baby and hold the baby in my arms and give the baby my full attention. Say, I hear you, you're really upset. I'm going to hold you till you're all done. If my attitude is, you know, I'm going to hold you and be here to comfort you, that's a little different than I'm going to help you stop crying as soon as possible. You know, if the idea is I'm going to let your crying run its course till you're all done, then maybe there's not a need to use a pacifier or a dummy or some kind of intervention. It's for me to be with you and convey to you how much I care for you, you know, and I'm going to be with you until you're all done. And if it's natural for me to sway a little bit, maybe I'll realize that I'm swaying a little bit. I don't think any of us would want to say to a parent, oh, just don't sway. But to realize that we don't necessarily need to do any of that stuff. The most important is for us to give our full attention, and that just our full attention, we can convey so much care to the child.
And I think very inspiring for the culture in Cyprus in particular, where we see there is a lot of, you know, the parenting is very strong, and I think it's very, we do want to do our best in Cyprus very much, but maybe sometimes doing a bit too much. So it's going to be an inspiration for us to introduce your subject.
Oh,
thank you very much.
You're very welcome. It's been my pleasure.